If you would open your Bibles to Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8. We've been talking about how we as Christians are supposed to handle situations where people are in poverty. And we looked last week at how the family is supposed to intervene. When someone's husband dies, it was the family that was supposed to intervene. They're supposed to come in. When you have a poor person in your family, someone loses their job, it's the rest of the extended family, the cousins, brothers, sisters, children, grandchildren, aunts. They're supposed to come together to take care of the member of the family who is in poverty. In Romans 8, beginning in verse 19, the scripture says this: "For the earnest expectation of the creature waits for the manifestation of the sons of God. For the creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who has subjected the same in hope. Because the creature itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption and to the glorious liberty of the children of God." And notice verse 22. "For we know that the whole creation groans and travails in pain together until now." What Romans 8 is teaching us is because of the fall, because of sin, this whole world, every bit of creation, every creature in it, is suffering, is groaning, is sick and tired of the way things are, and is waiting for the return of Christ, for him to redeem all things and restore them the way he desires them to be. When we begin to talk about poverty, the thing we have to understand is that every single human being, and therefore every single family, has some level of brokenness, sin, and dysfunction. So when you begin to talk about the family is supposed to step in when someone is widowed, the family is supposed to step in when someone is disabled, the family is supposed to step in when someone gets elderly, the family is supposed to step in when someone's put out, when their house burns down, when they lose their job. The problem with that is everyone's family is dysfunctional. Sometimes the families are dysfunctional because of infighting with brothers and sisters. Yeah, I've experienced this, where there's an elderly widow and the brothers and sisters are fighting. Okay, so one sister that really wants to help isn't able to help because other brothers won't let him. Or one brother that wants to help isn't able to help because other brothers and sisters are mad at each other. Okay, you can have this through adultery. You can have this through divorce. You can have this through crime, where somebody's incarcerated who's supposed to be caring for their mother. There's all kinds of these scenarios. Okay, and if we were to sit here, we could talk for hours about the people we know and the brokenness that has taken place in their family. Okay, death, sin, infighting, strife among brothers and sisters, parents and children having falling out, grandchildren and grandparents having falling out. We live in a broken world with broken families. So many times, it's not as easy as, okay, your husband died, now your children will take care of you. Because many times, the children are so mad at each other that they don't care about their mother. And sometimes they're so mad at their mother that they won't do anything about it. Okay, well, you have an aunt. Well, my aunt hasn't spoken to me in 20 years. I'm not going to do anything for her. And the sin and the fighting causes where these people could fall through the cracks. Many times you have unconverted children. Okay, you may have a widow in the church, and her children are lost. Yeah, I think of a lady that came to our church a couple times. I went and visited her son in prison. Her son is a complete lunatic felon who goes in and out of prison. How is he going to take care of her? He's incarcerated. He can't even take care of himself. When I visited him there in jail, he said, "Yeah, I'm gonna be out." And so he got out and he was back in jail 2 days later. How is he going to take care of his mother? What is going to happen to her? It's her only child. Okay, what about couples who are infertile? Okay, that's part of a broken world. They're unable to have children. So when they get old, who's going to take care of them? You know, there are some families where infertility runs. I know of a family in particular where it's been single, one child to one child to one child. Okay, all that happens is one person dies and that whole family's gone. They don't have cousins. They don't have aunts and uncles. Okay, so what do you do in those situations? Well, 1 Timothy 5, turn there. We looked at this briefly the last couple weeks. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, Paul is going to instruct the church to step in these cases. Notice the government is not involved anywhere in this. And there's a reason for that. We're going to look through that. But in these cases of brokenness, the church is supposed to step in. So 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 3. Honor widows that are widows indeed. In other words, honor widows that are really, really in trouble, that are really, really widows. Now, you look at that and you go, well, every widow is suffering in some way, shape, or form, be it emotionally, be it physically, etc., etc. But we have to understand that there are some widows who married a millionaire, and she doesn't need financial help. Okay, she may need some things done around the house, but she doesn't need money. There are some widows who had 15 kids. You know what? They got everything taken care of. There are some widows who are 22. They'll get remarried in 2 years. Okay, there's different scenarios here. So what he's speaking of is widows. He's going to give us a detailed explanation of how to look through. And this applies not just to widows, but this is how we would look at the filter for everyone who is especially prone to poverty. This would be the disabled. This would be the elderly. This would be the orphans. We're going to look through this and say, okay, who is it that we help? And who is it that we don't help? Again, we've looked at before, if you're able-bodied, you should be working. Ruth is a good example of that. Ruth works to take care of her elderly, widowed mother-in-law. Okay, we, as able-bodied people, should be working. So how do we discern who do we help and who do we go say, you need to go get a job and work? So if any widow, verse 4, have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home, to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. First and foremost, we looked last week. Okay, family should get involved. If somebody's parents dies and then there's a child that's an orphan, their family should step in and bring them into their home. Okay, your mother, if your father dies, you should take your mother into your home, or you should make sure that she's comfortable in her home. Okay, family should step in and take care of their parents. Now, she that is a widow indeed, who is the widow that the church is supposed to take care of? And desolate, that is the key word there. She is desolate. She has no one else to turn to. Okay, now this could be because her children are incarcerated. This could be because her children are lost. Think of Acts 6. We're going to look at that with the deacons. Many of those widows, I imagine, probably had children. They were just unconverted children. Their children may be the Pharisees that we looked at last week who said, sorry, mom and dad, can't help you because I left all my money to God when I die. So what do you do? What do you do when someone is desolate? They have no children. They have no converted children. Their children are deadbeats and they're in prison. They're incarcerated, whatever it may be. What do you do? The key here is someone who is desolate, someone who does not have a family member who can take care of them. You think of maybe even a widow who has children. Okay? Can a 6-year-old boy provide for his mother? No. Maybe when he's 16, 17, 18. Maybe. But a woman with young children, okay, he's not going to be able to step in and help. Okay, so that's the idea here is the desolate. That's the key thing, that there is no family member who is able or willing to help. We talked last week about the willing part. She trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she that lives in pleasure is dead while she lives. Okay, he's going to explain what he means by pleasure here in just a minute and talk about this. So, and these things keep in charge that they may be blameless. Okay, you're looking for widows who there's not major flaws in their character. Let not a widow be taken to the number under 60 years old. 60 years old. Okay, why would you not take in a woman who is under 60 years old? She's able-bodied. She can work. Okay, now obviously in the way we are as a church, we want men to be the ones providing for their families and free up their wives to help raise the kids, take care of the home, etc. But you know what? When tough times come, sometimes you have to be Ruth and you have to go and work in the fields. That's not ideal, but that's one of the things you have to do. So if you have a 22-year-old widow, she is fully capable of working. Now, when you get someone who is getting older, 65, 75, think of someone like Miss Eleanor. How old is Miss Eleanor now? 92? Okay. Not very many people hire 92-year-olds. Okay, and I don't think she can help Wayne run a weed eater. Okay, I just don't think it's going to happen. Okay, that is what it's referring to here. Keep reading. Having been the wife of one man. The indication here is you're talking about her sexual purity, and we'll talk about that just more in just a minute. Well reported of for good work. She has a good reputation. Okay, What about the widow who is in poverty because she just got out of jail for bank robbery? She's a widow. But why is she in poverty? Because of very poor choices, because she's a shyster, because she ripped people off. Okay? She brought up children. She's lodged strangers. She has washed the saints' feet. She's received the afflicted. And she has diligently followed every good work. Okay? Someone who is of good character. Someone who has worked hard. Okay? Many people are in poverty because they've been lazy. Okay? There are times when people work hard and, you know what, the income doesn't meet the outgo. That happens. There are times when people work and their house burns down and the insurance doesn't cover it. There's times when the car breaks down. There's times when there's calamity. But many people are in poverty because of poor choices they make. So when someone comes to the church and says, hey, I need assistance, you know, the first question we ask is, tell me about your family. Do you have a child, a brother, a sister, an aunt, an uncle? Do you have a family member who can help you? And if they say, no, I've already talked to so-and-so. So-and-so's dead. So-and-so's in prison. Well, then we say, okay, you know, why are you in this financial difficulty? I know of one widow. She was in financial difficulty because her husband left her with, I don't remember, it was tens of thousands of dollars in debt. Okay? She was in trouble, but it wasn't because of her poor choices. It was because of her husband's poor choices. Okay? Keep reading. But the younger widows refuse, for when they have begun to wanton against Christ, they will marry, having damnation because they cast off their first faith. And withal they learn to be idle, wandering from house to house, not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. Okay? What is he referencing here? This is where it goes back to the wife of one man. This is where it goes back to living in pleasure. If the church pays for a single lady, 23, 24, 25, 35 years old, pays for all of her bills. Okay, that's what it means here by taking the widow indeed. Pay for all of her bills, pay for her everything she has to do. What is she going to do all day? Well, she's going to be an idle busybody. Okay, unless she's genuinely converted, she's going to use that to go party. She's going to go out and try to get herself another man. Okay, she's going to be looking for a man, maybe not necessarily a Christian man. Okay, and he says, you know what? That is not what we're paying for. Okay, we do not pay for people to go on Disney cruises. Okay, that's not what we're talking about here. As a church, we don't pay for people to go out to the club and pay their tab at the bar. Okay, that's not what we do. That's what he's referencing here. Okay, a young lady, we don't pay for her to have a roof over her head for her to prostitute herself out. Okay, we don't do that. What we are here for is to take care of genuinely impoverished people who are physically unable to take care of themselves. So this is what he's referencing here. So when he speaks of being the wife of one man, what you're speaking of here is a woman who has lived a life of sexual decency. You know what? There are some women who could be impoverished because, you know what? They ran around on their husband. And so their husband wrote them out of his will when he died. Okay? That happens. We don't think of that, but that does happen. Many times that's why someone is desolate, because of the sin that they've committed. So he speaks in verse 14, says, I will therefore the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, giving none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. The younger women, get remarried. I think of my grandma. My grandma's 96. She's not getting remarried. Okay, that does happen on a rare occasion, but she's not moving, she's not changing, she's not bringing anyone in the house. That's just the way it's going to be. Okay. Now, if my grandma was, you know, 22, 21, that may be a whole different story. Many times, older widows don't remarry. Sometimes they do, and they're free to do that. But most of the time, a younger lady, under 60 years old, will probably get remarried because she's going to live another 30, 40 years, maybe by herself. Okay, so that's what he's referencing there. For some are already turned aside after Satan. If any man or woman that believes have widows. Notice again it says believes. What is one of the reasons people are desolate? Because their family members are not converted and don't care for them. So he's speaking here of believing people taking care of their believing family members. Have widows, let them relieve them. And notice this, and let not the church be charged that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. And from here he goes into talking about caring for the elders of the church. paying pastor's salaries. That's what it's referencing here. So what he's teaching here is that if you have a widow who meets these qualifications, who doesn't have believing family members, who has no income, who has no savings because of her husband left her nothing, who's in financial poverty, the church should take her in and literally pay every single one of her expenses. Okay, she should be a line item on the church budget. We pay for her health care. We pay for her housing. We pay for her transportation. We pay for her food. We pay for everything for her. That is what we give as a church. The reason we give is to take care of the poor. That's one of the main reasons. I think I've told y'all before of John Calvin saying that 50% of a church's budget should be given to benevolence, to take care of the poor. Okay, now that's not scripture, but it shows a completely different mindset than what we have as Christians today. Okay, the reason we give money is so that we have nice buildings. And no, the reason we give is we pool our resources, Acts 6, to take care of those who are in poverty. Because most of us could not afford to take on an entire family, an entire lady and her home and all of her expenses. Many people are unable to take a woman into their house, to take a widow into their house, because they don't have the space or the room, because they have so many kids or whatever it may be. But you know what we can do? We can all give and pool our resources so that we as a church can care for those who are impoverished. So when we begin to look at this, the Bible teaches something entirely differently than what we anticipate. We are a throw money at it people. That's what we are. We are the priest and the Levite who see the guy beat up on the side of the road, and we consider ourselves more holy than them because we roll down the window and throw money out the window as we drive past. That is the way we are as a society. It is far easier to go to a church and get $10,000 than it is to go to a church and get 10 volunteers. It is far easier. People would rather give money than give time. And I can give you 100,000 illustrations of this. But people would much rather drop a few bucks on the offering plate than take time out of their schedules. Now, what Paul is teaching Timothy here is a very involved approach to poverty. He is not telling him, hey, when a widow knocks on your door with a sob story, give her cash. He doesn't say that. You have to be involved in her life. You have to ask the hard questions. Now, I'll tell you some story. I'm not going to use names today, just to give you some illustrations of situations that we as a church have done. We had a single mom come to us one time, and she was having a hard time paying some of her bills. And she wanted us as a church to help her. And so Glenn and I went there to her house, and we sat down and talked with her. She was she wasn't coming to church here, but we knew her, and she was having a hard time meeting her bills, and it was all legitimate needs. I mean, it's very legitimate. How do you, as a single mom raising a toddler, how do you get a decent job and still pay for childcare and all those things? And so we began to ask her, say, well, do you have any family members? Well, her mom was dead. Her dad was dead. Okay, well, you know, what about family? She had a couple sisters. So what about family? She says, I do have one uncle, but I'm embarrassed to ask him. So, well, we as a church are willing to help you, but you need to talk to your uncle first. You know how hard that is to tell a single mom that we're not going to help you right now? With her kid playing right there? When you know her kid and her kid sits in your lap? That's hard. But here's what happened. She called her uncle. Her uncle got his name on her bank account so he could transfer money in anytime it was short and he could watch it from his phone. Now let me ask you, what did better? Us paying her rent for 1 month or us telling her you need to talk to your uncle? Now that was a hard conversation for her to have. But guess what? Her uncle said, no, I will take care of you. I will take care of you and I will take care of your child. You work. You take care of the things, but I want to be on your bank account so I can transfer money in anytime you need it, just like that. Now, was that a hard conversation for Glenn and I to have? Yes. It was very awkward. Yes, it's very uncomfortable because you're sitting there going, like, I'll just give you everything in my wallet. You know, like, that's the thought that comes to your mind. But you know what that would have done? That would be giving a woman a fish, and it would not have taught her to fish. It would not have helped her. I'll tell you another situation. Okay, this is a little different, doesn't necessarily deal with poverty. But Wesley and I had to sit down with some brothers and sisters that were fighting. Okay, and part of the fight was over the care of their mother. You know how ridiculously awkward it is to sit down with people and get into their family business at what, like 11 o'clock at night? You know, it's not fun. It's not fun. Nobody wants to be up in somebody else's business. But you know what we were there for? To help the brothers and sisters get along so that their mother didn't suffer. So that their family would be whole. That is awkward. That is difficult. But that's what Paul is telling Timothy. You don't just roll down the window and throw money. Okay? That may give someone a reprieve for a moment. But we as Christian people are called to be like the Good Samaritan. We are called to get personally involved in the situation. Okay, we need to remember this. We need to ask the hard questions. Okay? Why are you unable to pay your bills? Okay? That's a hard question to ask. And people will have a sob story. Do you have any family members that can help? No, I don't. Okay, well, do you have any family members? Yes. Well, why are they unwilling to help? Well, they have their own families and their own bills, and they can't help. Okay, I've had to have some very awkward conversations. Glenn has too. Talking with people. Okay? So your son can pay for a trip for you to go to Disney World, but can't pay for you to eat? Maybe you need to tell your son next time, I would rather eat than go to Disney World. Oh, I couldn't tell him that. Well, we're not going to help you because you have a son that is more than financially capable. Okay, the trip that he spent on Disney World would pay for your food bill in the next couple months. That's a hard conversation to have. It is. Now, many times, again, we live in a broken world with broken families. Okay, I actually did a memorial service in this room where the brother was out in the parking lot of this church giving cash to his drug addict sister to sign out of the will. Okay, I know what broken families look like. And I know how people don't care for their brothers and sisters. And I know how they don't care for their moms and dads. And I know how they fight like cats and dogs. How they fight over the last penny. How they want 2 cents more than somebody else in the inheritance. We live in a broken, devastated world. And the way the church is supposed to be involved is to first and foremost actually be involved. Because many times the way you fix it is by getting the brother and sister in the same room and saying, let's talk about this. Because what is the most ideal situation? Is the restoration of that family, not the paying of the light bill. Okay? Now, if the family cannot be restored, yes, the church must intervene to pay the light bill. But first and foremost, the church should be focusing on the salvation and the restoration and in the reconciliation of the family. And if that is not possible through efforts, then the church is to ensure that people, like widows indeed, do not suffer because of the sins of their family. We are not going to punish a child because their parents are lazy. When you begin to talk about who is most prone for poverty, we look at what? Fatherless, the widows, the disabled, the immigrant. So what are we supposed to do? Get personally involved. Okay, for example, you have an immigrant that comes. No speak English, can't get a job. Okay, well, you know what you do? You go get him a job because you do speak English. Yeah, you can give him a little bit of money, and that will tide his family over for 2 days. But what's best for him? To get him a job. So when we talk about this, many people say the solution to poverty, and this is why the government shouldn't be involved, because the government's solution to poverty is we'll take your money and give it to them. Never asking whether the person is genuinely in need and never actually getting in to find out why is there a problem here. When you go to a government office, they don't ask you, why are you unable to pay this bill? They don't ask that. They don't ask, where did your paycheck go when you can't feed your family? Oh, you spend it all on cigarettes. They don't ask that question. But you know what we have to do as a church? Ask that question. This is why the alleviation of poverty is supposed to take place on a case-by-case basis with the local church, not the government. Because the government is just going to throw money at the problem, money that they take from other people. Christians are called to sit down, to seek to solve the problem. And many times solving that problem is helping financially. There was a widow in our church that asked for help several times. And so we did what we do with anybody. We offered and say, well, maybe the issue is not the income. Maybe the issue is you need some help budgeting. You know what her response was? Please. Please. My husband did all the bills, and I have no idea what to do since he died. I am clueless. So one of the deacons in our church, that's what deacons are supposed to do, him and his wife sit down with her, and they went over budget. And you know what the deacon said? The deacon said, there's no way this doesn't work. I will pay her car payment myself. That's what he did. Because that's what you're supposed to do. And then we sat down and we paid for her to get financial counseling and all these other things so that she got out of poverty. Okay? So when we talk about this, the very first thing we have to do as a church is we have to be involved in the situation. Secondly, after we're involved, if we see that the widow in this case, or the disabled, or the fatherless, there is no solution with them found within their family, then we pay for it out of our own pocket as Christian people. Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. I offered one time for a single mom who was having financial issues. I said, you know what? We'll get all the men in the church, and we will come, and we will move you to a place you can afford. She hung up on me. Because she wasn't looking for help. Okay, she was physically able to work. She didn't want to. She was having a hard time paying her bills. I said, well, look, you know, you're paying $1,100 a month in rent. I get you a place $350. Safe, good neighborhood. And all the men in the church will come and we will move everything for you. And we'll even take care of the down payment for you, or the deposit. She hung up on me. You know what? We didn't help her. Why? Because she was not looking for help. She was looking for free money. She was physically able to work. She was physically able to do a lot of things. She had family members in her life who could provide for her, and she didn't want to call them. Okay? So when we look at this, if the family is so broken that it cannot be fixed, then the church is to be involved and pay whatever it takes. Okay? Whatever it costs. Okay? We are to be willing to do whatever it takes to take care of the poor among us. If that means we house them, yeah, I know a pastor friend of mine, he's got several trailers in his yard. And his wife will find homeless women, and they will live in his front yard, rent-free. And they will feed them, and they will take care of them. Why? Because that's what Christians do. That's what we do. Now, are there people who don't want our help? Yes. Are there people who don't want a job? Yes. Are there people who don't want to go and call their billionaire uncle? Yes. And our job is to step in and say, okay, I got a job lined up for you. You need to talk to your uncle, et cetera, et cetera. So the church is supposed to be involved. Now, wonderful thing, Acts 6. Acts 6. Not only is the church to be involved, but this is to be a huge aspect of the church's ministry. Acts 6. Now remember in Acts 2 and in Acts 4, when it talks about people being saved, one of the things it references is the fruit of their salvation was that they would take and give generously of their possessions. So that no one, it says, was in need. No one in the church, was in need because everyone in the church gave above and beyond, including people like Barnabas who would sell extra land so that the church had the money to take care of the poor in their midst. Acts 6, verse 1. In those days, when the number of the disciples was multiplied, there arose a murmuring of the Grecians against the Hebrews because their widows were neglected. Notice this. In the daily ministration. What is daily ministration? That means every day the people of the church went to these people's house and made sure that they were fed, clothed, and taken care of. They passed out food daily to the widows that were desolate. Again, this is not a one time, we'll just send you a check. This is not a one time, we'll do this for you. This is a daily. Every day, they made sure these people had something to eat. Well, the church had gotten so big at this point in time that guess what happened? Some of the widows were neglected. It was just an overlook. It was an over. I mean, if you had 200 or 300 people that you had to feed every day, it's not unusual for somebody to maybe forget to go down the street, to miss 20 people, to forget a page on their list. Okay, that happens. So the 12, this is the 12 apostles, called the multitude of disciples to them and said, "It is not reasonable that we should leave the word of God and serve tables." They said, "Look, we can't stop preaching the gospel to spend all of our time feeding widows." Oh, that's because feeding widows and feeding the poor is not important, right? No, keep reading. "Wherefore, brethren, look out among you 7 men of honest report, full of the Holy Ghost and wisdom." Why would they need wisdom? Because when you are dealing with people in poverty, sometimes the way you help is you get in there and you feed them and you give them money. And sometimes the way you help is you get them a job application. Sometimes the way you help is you call their son and you sit down with them and you have a meeting with the family members. Sometimes you help different ways. So they need people who are full of wisdom, who we may appoint over this business. "But we will give ourselves continually to prayer and the ministry of the word." Okay, this is the creation of the office of deacon. So they sought out, in verse 5, they chose Stephen, Philip, Prochorus, Nicanor, Timon, Parmenas, Nicholas, and they prayed, laid their hands on them. Notice verse 7. This is the appointment of deacons. Notice verse 7. "The word of God increased." Not only that, the number of disciples multiplied in Jerusalem greatly, but notice this. Who were the people most resistant to Jesus' ministry? And guess who gets converted? A great multitude of the priests. What happens when the church actually does what God created it to do in taking care of the poor? Well, it frees up elders to preach and to counsel and to pray. It means it gives other opportunities. What do you think one of these widows' neighbors did after seeing some random people come with a hot meal to her house every single day? Who are those people? And why do they care for you? They don't even know who you are 2 weeks ago. And yet now they're coming. They're fixing the hole in your roof. Now they're coming. They're bringing you food every day. How could these people love you? You're not related to them. It opens up opportunities for the gospel to be shared. Now, what happens to people who oppose Christianity? How many of y'all ever heard the idea that all churches want is your money? Churches are greedy. Okay, I've heard that before. In fact, we had one guy who visited here one time, and he got mad because I preached on giving money to the poor. I even said in the sermon, "I don't want your money, and our church doesn't need your money. You need to give to poor people." "All the church wants is my money." That was his response. You know how you really put that to rest? Is when you use the money that is given to take care of the poor. You know, it's really hard. It's very easy to say that a politician is disengaged and doesn't care, and that they're just doing it for a photo op. Okay, and that's what politicians do. It's very hard, though, to say that about Christian people when they are housing widows in their own home, when they are constantly going to their homes, and when of the two offices of the church, you have one office completely, totally dedicated to the alleviation of poverty. And that is the office of deacon. Okay? People ask, well, why do we have to have elders and deacons? Well, one, because it's biblical, but two, because a huge responsibility of the church is the alleviation of the poverty within the community. In fact, that is what deacons were created to do. Deacons were not created to be in leadership. Deacons were created to serve. The word deacon means servant. They were created. That office was created to see that poverty, specifically the widows, was alleviated within the church. Okay, the idea of the church where I can't go to that church because I don't have nice clothes. We should laugh at people who say that because our church should be so different. Well, you know, that church is well-to-do. The church that is well-to-do should be giving of their well-to-do to help those who aren't well-to-do. Okay, all the arguments against the church should be done away with because of our generosity to the poor. Okay, people, you know, unfortunately, in certain places, you know, the idea of a Baptist deacon just means you're more corrupt than all the rest of the Baptists. Okay, and y'all have seen that before. But the idea of a Baptist deacon should be seen in that church cares for its widows, it cares for the fatherless, it cares for the disabled, it cares for the impoverished and hurting people in their community, so much so that they actually have deacons at their church. When was the last time you ever saw a church with deacons like that? You mean the deacons are here to take care of those who are impoverished? Yes, that's why the whole office exists. So when we talk about families that are hurting, you know what? Part of being a deacon is Wesley going with me to sit down with families that are fighting. It's not fun. I'd rather be sitting there eating brownies and drinking milk and going to bed. But you know what? That's part of it. Okay? Part of being a deacon. We have deacons that mow widows' yards. They go and blow the leaves off the roof. Why? Because that's what they're supposed to do. That's their job. And we're going to see this even in the sermon this morning as we talk about Jesus washing the disciples' feet. So when we look at the church, the alleviation of poverty is to be a major part of Christianity. By the way, what are the two greatest commandments? Love God and love your neighbor. Okay? What was the office of deacon created for? To help us love our neighbor in tangible ways. And they're supposed to have the wisdom to sit down with those who are impoverished and find out what is the root. What is the root of their poverty, and how can we help alleviate it? Okay? Turn to Luke 10 and we'll be done. Luke 10. Verse 25. Behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tempted Jesus, saying, Master, what will I do to inherit eternal life? He said to him, What is written in the law? How do you read? He answering said, You will love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, You have answered right, this do, and you shall live. Notice this, he willing to justify himself. He wanted to think that he loved his neighbor even though he didn't care for him. Said to Jesus, Who is my neighbor? Jesus answering said, A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him. He went to him, bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence, and gave them to the host, and said to him, Take care of him, and whatever you spend more, when I come again, I will repay you. Which now of these three thinkest thou was neighbor unto him that fell among the thieves? He said, He that showed mercy on him. Then said Jesus to him, Go and do likewise. What was the last thing the Samaritan did? Gave money. You ever notice that? That was the last thing he did. The first thing was he went to him. He actually got off his donkey and went and knelt on the side of the road and helped the man. That is one of the largest missing pieces in Christianity today. Is we say we're better than the priest and Levite because we roll down the window and throw a few coins out the window. No. You stop the car, you get out, you go get involved. You do realize that God could have just, you know, rolled down the window of heaven and thrown out a couple words and rolled it back up. But instead he sent his son. To live with us, to walk with us, to die for us. So as Christian people, we need to be especially concerned with the alleviation of poverty. Personally involved in it. And we need to realize that not everyone has the ideal family situation. There are brothers and sisters who are at odds. There are parents and children who are at odds. And we must do everything we can to bring reconciliation. But should those efforts to bring reconciliation fail, then we need to step in and alleviate the poverty of those who are hurting. Any questions or comments? Bob?
I have a very close friend that when they retired from the house, they realized that we're not going to be able to make it on income. So one of the sons who is well off and purchased a home. And with the stipulation, even though he's got other brothers and sisters, that home was his when his friend passed away, which I thought was a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely helped out that couple immensely. So the moral of the story is, anybody wants to buy my house.
But,
it has really helped. That way, they do not have to go to ask any other family members
yep.
or anybody else to take care of them. They're able to sustain themselves with the money they have gotten with the mortgage.
Yeah, it's a tremendous way to do it. And we need to be creative, too, with the way we can help people. Sometimes one of the greatest ways you can help somebody is buy them a push lawnmower. You know, hey, you got your own business now. You have to sweat for it, but a tremendous way to help somebody. Any other questions or comments? All right. Well, Dwight, you want to close in prayer?
I have a question.